This weekend, I got to catch a great game of Commander on stream, where the pod had decided on playing a high-power game. On turn 3, a player on a mono-blue deck cast Back to Basics, and weirdly, it was the mono-red player at the table who was hurt the most by it. They'd drawn mostly non-basic utility lands, which had come into play tapped. "What are you doing with Back to Basics in that deck?" the mono-red player lamented. "I thought we weren't playing CDH this game." This mismatch was fortunately defused very quickly, and the good times kept coming. Commander is still Commander after all, and the game was entertaining for the players and audience alike. But it was a mismatch of expectations, and maybe there's a better way to phrase it than high power. Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we have a very special episode. I have none other than the Sage of Fables joining me today. Sage, welcome to Gemstone Mine. Thank you for coming on. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you for having me. You know, when I heard you in that video just say my name, there was no way that I could not come here today to talk to you about magic, something that I just love so much and am so truly passionate about. But yes, hi, I'm Sage, pronouns say them. I am a professional storyteller and D&D and Magic the Gathering content creator and streamer. I have a YouTube channel called Sage of Fables where I do deck techs on both casual and competitive EDH decks. And then I also stream weekly over on the Venture Maidens Twitch channel where we play D&D games, one of which is a Theros D&D game that features many awesome members from our Magic community. And yeah, I do a lot of stuff.
Which is one of the reasons why it's taken so long for us to be able to do some content together. But in a way, I'm kind of glad because now we get to talk about something that you brought out only recently. Recently on Twitter, you had posted one of your big recent works. You have a deck evaluation rubric. I'm going to be including a link to this in the description of this episode for everyone to take a look at. But tell us a little bit about this rubric. Why don't we just say whether your deck is a 7 or not?
Everyone says their deck is a 7, and that's the problem. So kind of where this came from is that I run a casual EDH server that was born out of my LGS that unfortunately closed about 3 years ago. And so we moved to a friend's house, but then he moved to Pennsylvania, and then, you know, all of our rest of our friends moved out of the city. So we're like, well, we all still really want to play together. So let's figure out a way to do it online. And then the pandemic happened, and then bless, Spell Table happened. And so we created this Discord for all of us to come play. And since then, I've been gradually introducing new people in and trying to develop, you know, a nice casual meta that we can have online. But, you know, over the years that we've been playing, you know, our tastes change and everything, and we're running into problems where the games were feeling unfun. And despite many of us being friends for years, we were still having these communication issues where we just weren't quite having the same conversation, or we couldn't agree on terminology, or, like, you know, we weren't quite relating or what our expectations and hopes were for a game of Magic, and that was really frustrating. And so eventually, you know, we decided, like, all right, what's a way that... So the problem with, like, the you know, 1 to 10 power scale and other those, like, one-dimensional ways to, like, evaluate a deck is that they're only capturing one dimension, and that leaves so much lacking in a conversation. Because if, you know, if we look at, like, what the command zone says, that, like, a 7.5 wins by, like, turn 9, and, you know, and it's kind of optimized, it's just a little bit too vague, and that doesn't really describe the whole complexity of, like, what a semi-optimized, you know, like, deck that's looking to go to combat is versus a combo deck. Like, those are two completely different styles of decks, and they need different ways to interact with. And so with that, came up with, basically, if you're all familiar with D&D, an alignment chart for decks where... Sorry, go ahead.
Future John is going to have this on the screen for everybody to enjoy. Don't worry, Future John, you'll make it happen.
Good job, Future John. And so So we decided to set up, you know, all right, well, let's take, let's start with two axes then and see how much more in complexity we can include without it being overwhelming. So on our x-axis, the horizontal axis up at the top, we have the axis of optimization, and this describes how tuned your deck is. And it basically is a measure of how close do you come to the, on turn three, I have 3 mana available to me, and I spend 3 mana to do 3 mana's worth of things. It's like, how close to that do you get? And so in a casual deck, you're going to be closer to that. On turn three, you probably have access to 4 or 5 mana because you've on turn three, you've cultivated. So on turn four, you have access to about 6 mana. And that's reasonable. It's fairly standard in like your kind of, you know, usual sort of lower powered kind of casual game. And then on the opposite end of that axis, we have high power where, you know, you're probably playing fast mana or rituals, or you're trying to make the most use of as little mana as possible. And the high power decks are very mana efficient. That is sort of, they're sort of like their basis. And then in the middle of that, as sort of this nice medium area, you have tuned, which, you know, probably has some tapped lands, probably plays your cultivates and your Kadama's Reaches, your Soul Rings, your 2 mana rocks. And then also with that is like, how many tap lands does your mana base run? A casual deck is, you know, maybe doesn't have Guild Gates, but, you know, probably has some other like lands that come into play tap, like Triomes. Whereas a higher power deck is likely to not have any. And so that's what really accelerates their game plan. So that's the speed. And then on the y-axis, we have the texture. And this is sort of like a new concept that kind of stealing that language from poker. And that's talking about the texture of the game, because a deck that's looking to go to combat and win through beats is going to have a very different texture than what a very like combo focused deck is going to be. And sometimes those don't mesh very well because you need certain kinds of interaction to answer one or to stop one. Whereas, like, that might be superfluous or unable to, you know, address the threats that you're seeing from the other. And so from there, we have Battlecruiser, which is strictly combat beats. No alternate win conditions, no cards that say you win the game, you know, no Approach of the Second Sun, no Aristocrats draining, nothing outside of pure combat beats. So, like, with that, you have Voltron strategies. You have, you know, just general big creatures or maybe token swarms. So all those kinds of flavors of decks where they're just looking to smack you in the face real hard. Which is one of my personal favorites, because like that's one of my favorite things to build is like high powered, like super beats decks. Like as a D&D player, I love building like super kick-ass fighter combinations. So like, I love me a good Battlecruiser deck.
I've got to pick your brain about some D&D builds later on. I got a couple of ideas going around my head right now, but we'll save that for later.
that's a different video. And then on the opposite end of that axis, we have combo-centric decks. So these are decks that are looking to assemble a combination of cards that are going to close the game. And that could be, you know, an infinite combo, or it could be like a hard board lock. It could be, you know, any sort of things that when you assemble X amount of cards, you go, I win the game. Or you create a deterministic win state for yourself. And in the middle of that, between those two, is synergistic, where you are committing permanents to the board. You probably can win through combat damage, but there's an alternate game plan built in there. And so that includes your Aristocrats builds, your Landfall builds, your mill decks, like all these, you know, all these sort of like decks where you're looking to primarily commit artifacts and enchantments to the battlefield in order to gain huge amounts of value. And they win primarily through the value they accrue by establishing these engines. And so with the intersection of these two axes, you get a very rich picture of a deck. And it's interesting also to see of like, you know, where your decks fall on this alignment chart too, to be like, what, you know, you can kind of see your play patterns. And I think that's also an interesting insight that was kind of a fun thing.
That was actually... Yes, that was a very cool thing. I was smiling when I was looking at your alignment chart that you set up for yourself using these axes, and you've got none other than Korvald as your casual battle cruiser deck.
I was determined.
Oh, that is phenomenal. That is truly phenomenal. But I really, this spoke to me, because this is something that I was looking at and trying to find a way to vocalize how I had felt trying to approach different levels of games. Mm-hmm. I had my first vacation in like 2 years after the winter holidays, and I was lucky enough to get quite a few VEDH games in. Mm-hmm. And this was before you had published this information. And I was primarily, when speaking with people, trying to say, okay, this is my brand new deck. This is a Trey Lasara deck. This is a going to be beats. And it's not going to be turning the corner until I can find a way to give her trample. So probably like turn 5, 6, 7, it's going to be putting people on the clock. Before that, I'm just doing Soul Sisters things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at least part of that goes along with what you were describing when you're describing the X-axis, the optimization of the deck. Essentially, when the deck is able to go from just getting ready to all set up to just going for it and trying to put people on the clock and end the game. What I think I was missing in that discussion was, as you described, the Y-axis, the texture of the deck. And if I may, it looks like when you're describing the Y-axis, you're describing how far outside of the norm, I guess, where magic is Richard Garfield intended, do you need to go in order to be able to have a meaningful interaction with that person's game plan? Because if you're on a battlecruiser strategy, you're interacting with someone else on a battlecruiser strategy anytime you cast one of your own creatures and commit that to the board. Mm-hmm. Because it is an attacker that could potentially get through and deal damage and win the game, but it's also a blocker that can stop them from swinging in. Very simple levels of interaction, but very effective. While on the other hand, if we're starting to look at those combo-centric types of lists, it seems like the battle there is less on the battlefield and almost more on the stack.
Mm-hmm.
You need much more specialized interaction in order to get through and be able to meaningfully deal with what your opponents are doing. Whereas in the middle, those synergized, you need, again, some more specialized interaction. You need to be able to remove probably creatures and artifacts and enchantments and probably planeswalkers at some point or another.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure I'm not putting any words in your mouth there, Sage. Good.
Yeah, no, yeah, oh my god, Super Friends definitely in that synergistic category. Yeah, okay. So I think really like the sort of the key to like the Y-axis and understanding like what exactly the texture means is removal. That's really the sort of key component about it, because in a battlecruiser meta, like if everyone is, you know, roughly in this battlecruiser meta, you only need single target removal that can hit creatures, like or you know, maybe some equipment and stuff like that. And board wipes. Like, that's going to shut down... A board wipe is going to shut down a battlecruiser deck, no problem. That's going to be a significant stopping point where they're going to have to rebuild from. And so, but on the opposite end of that, of combo-centric, like, the most efficient way that you're going to be able to interact and stop a combo deck is on the stack. And sometimes that might be the only way. And that's why when we look at, like, battlecruiser and like, combo-centric decks, of how there can be this really sort of, like... kind of like sort of clashing, because, and that's why it's interesting, like, you know, like if you bring a, you know, if you bring like a battlecruiser, hardcore battlecruiser deck to a CDH pod, like it's going to be this weird mismatch of things, and the battlecruiser deck might win, but it's only because these like combo centric CDH decks aren't running that kind of removal to appropriately respond to it. And so it's being very mindful about how the kind of removal that you need to include in your deck in order to like be in this sort of category, and also what you can expect to respond to. So with that is like, and removal is a thing that allows you to sort of move more evenly across the spectrum. Because if a battlecruiser deck is packing, you know, counter spells and stuff like that, it's going to be able to mesh much more well with different styles of decks. And that's one way you can sort of bridge these gaps and not just be locked into a category.
Well, that actually leads me to my next question. Do you see these different parts on the alignment chart, do you look at them as like silos where if I have a casual battlecruiser deck, it can only play with casual battlecruiser decks? Or do you think there is some potential bleed between these different silos that you've put in here? I guess the alignments is a better way to put it.
Yeah, so and that's the thing, is like diversifying your removal suite will be the biggest thing in being able to play across these different categories. And that's also like when you're, you know, sort of developing and cultivating a meta, that's something to be cognizant of. And it's, you know, and do you want your, and when you're building your deck, do you want to build your deck to be good in a single meta, or do you want it to be able to go across and be good, you know, be generally able to compete at any part? And so you can tune your deck and build your deck in a way that is, you know, based on that choice. And so the wider amount of removal that you run, the more likely it is that you're going to be able to, you know, hang with anyone. And that's not to say you have to run 17 pieces, but, you know, make sure you've got, you can get your enchantments, you can do some counter spells, you know, any way that you can, you know, answer these, you know, big haymakers that we see in our wonderful format.
Absolutely. And I do think that just some of the old standards of interaction, when it's something that is a very versatile piece of interaction, like one of the reasons I always love building a casual Orzhov deck is just, oh yes, Anguished Unmaking, Utter End, Vindicate, D-Spark. Oh, I just feel like my cup runneth over with options where I have the ability to interact with almost anything someone puts on the table.
Oh my goodness. I made a Carador deck recently because I wanted, because one, I just, Abzan is not in my wheelhouse whatsoever. Creature reanimation, not in my wheelhouse whatsoever. But yes, I wanted to do something with that. But I also wanted to run all of these beautiful cards that I have that I would never run, like my Secret Lair Anguished Unmaking, an Assassin's Trophy, and, you know, be able to exile anything no matter what, and my beautiful Path to Exile. I'm like, yes, I'm going to answer all your shit.
Exactly. And like, on your alignment chart, you put that your Carador deck is a casual deck with that's also falling into the synergistic level, so not quite Battlecruiser. It has some additional layers above that where it's going to be threatening wins, not just through combat, but also potentially from other synergies you put onto the battlefield.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think, yeah, and so and with that, like, our, since we have started implementing this in our playgroup, and I've had some feedback from other people that I, you know, I've heard, you know, we've had very positive game experiences from it, and it's given us like a really great shorthand to be able to say immediately what we're looking for, and we have an idea about, you know, what kind of decks can fit into that sort of area. And so it's like, it's done really well.
That's pretty awesome. Now, before I move on to another question I had about this, I have to have a slight diversion. You had a video on your channel, I think a couple of months ago, where you had a really good description of how you have a Rule Zero discussion with your group. And you almost describe it as like, I'm going to pass the buck around and say, okay, player B, it's your turn, and you tell me what deck you want to play this time. Tell us a little bit about that for anyone who hasn't seen that video.
Yeah, so I think, you know, especially sitting down with friends, and a lot of us are brewers, we have fairly large collections, and so we always look to try and bring, like, new decks to the table. And so, I want to make space for that. And, you know, some of us have 20, 30 decks that we run, and everyone wants to be able to cycle through their decks and see that deck that they haven't played in 2 years. Like, last night my friend Chad really wanted to play Locust God. We're like, yeah, let's do it. And so that conversation goes is like, hey, you know, does anyone have a deck that they really want to play? And then, you know, we all generally know our decks, but then from there it's like, okay, you know, how optimized is it? Is it Battlecruiser, synergistic, or combo? All right, let's pull out something that can, you know, be roughly in that range then, that can match.
That's pretty.
Yeah, and then going around and, you know, after the game ends, it's like, all right, do you have one? Do you have one? And then, you know, keep it going to make sure that, because a lot of us have very different desires about what in a game of Magic makes us happy. Like, I love storming off and making tokens, and I know that's not always fun to sit through storm turns, so I want to make sure that when the game finishes and I've had my big Bruticlad storm win, that, you know, we get to do the thing that they want to do so that they can have their joy.
Absolutely. And I'll actually quote from the philosophy of Commander document that's on the Commander Rules Committee. At the end of an ideal Commander game, someone will have won, but all participants will have had the opportunity to express themselves through their deck building and gameplay. So let me ask about that, because that actually dovetails fairly nicely. Is there a way that we could potentially apply this paradigm that you're describing with your rubric to actual deck brewing? And if so, how would you suggest that somebody try to approach that?
Ooh, let's see. That's interesting. That's interesting because I haven't built a deck yet where I started with the paradigm in mind. All of my decks have been established and then I figured out what category that they would go into. But I think the way that I would approach that is, generally in my deck building, I think about how fast I want the deck to be. And I like to build powerful decks and with powerful strategies and synergies, but generally the sort of barrier or something that I put on myself in order to make it fair and interactable is that I generally slow my decks down. So I generally try to stay in the casual and tune level. And then, yeah, so picking your speed helps make a lot of choices for you and how optimized you want it to be, because, you know, if you don't want it to be that optimized, you're like, all right, no fetch lands, maybe the number of colors that you're running. And then from there deciding all right, well, you know, what does a strategy now want to be? And then you can modulate accordingly.
Got it. And then one of the things I'm going to bring back to something you said earlier, to make sure that your deck can potentially play against a wider range of opponents, having that broader suite of interaction, particularly when that interaction is diverse and ideally fairly versatile, able to have one piece of interaction hit multiple potential threats at a table, that tends to be a good way to kind of increase the range that your decks can play at. Very, very cool. So let me just ask, is there anything else we missed that you want to get out there about this rubric that you've come up with?
Ooh, I don't know. so that's the thing is, this whole thing has been a large hypothesis that I wanted to put out into the community to see, all right, I feel like this should work, but tell me if it does. And with that, I really do want people to try this. Anything that I can do to help encourage these conversations among their fellow players, I will 100% do. And so, if you try this out with your friends, with your play group, if you go to the LGS and be like, hey, look at this thing, tell me about it. Hit me up on Twitter, on Discord. My DMs are open. I love talking about Commander and hearing about people's experiences. And I want to do anything to make sure that when we go into both familiar and unfamiliar metas, that we feel equipped to talk about these things in a way that's productive and fun.
Absolutely. That's the main reason we're all playing Commander. It is a very fun format. And
heck yeah.
I'm with you. The more chances I get to play with anybody from sitting down with any of the Sculpty boys to sitting down with the father and his child who are literally opening pre-cons for the first time at a Magic Fest, those are all games that are good and potentially really fun.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest takeaway is that no matter where you are on this alignment chart, it is about fun, it's about finding the kind of games you want, and it's definitely the big thing, it's not about shaming people for their playstyles, and finding the joy in each and every one of these playstyles, because with the 24,000 card pool, there is so much we can do and so much more to be explored, and yeah, we just need to find better ways to talk about it.
Absolutely. So Sage, one more time, let's plug all of your many projects and the many hats that you wear. Where can people find you?
So generally the best place they're going to find me and keep up to date with everything that I do every week is by following me at Staff of Sage on Twitter. There I, post a weekly schedule of all the appearances I'll be doing on stream or on videos. And so I play D&D weekly on the Venture Maintenance Twitch channel where, we upload them to YouTube and publish them as podcasts. And you can find my YouTube channel where I talk about Magic the Gathering, Sage of Fables. And yeah, I think that is everything.
Well, thanks again, Sage, for joining us. This has been a real treat to finally get to do an episode with you. But I want to hear from the rest of you. Tell us what you think. Give us some feedback on this. This is obviously still a work in progress, but one that has so much promise that I am so excited about. Tell us what you think. Tell us about your successes in trying this. Tell us about some tweaks you may make. We want to hear about it. You can leave us a comment on YouTube where we are Gemstone Mind Podcast, You can add us on Twitter, where we are GemstoneMindMTG, or you can send us an email, gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John.
And I'm Sage.